Okay, my presentation today, Barriers Impeding and Enablers Promoting the Health and Wellness of Afghan Refugees in the San Francisco Bay Area. I have no financial relationship to disclose. I'm very honored to be here, by the way, with like-minded individuals. And many of you know the international definition of refugee, a person who is outside the country of his or her nationality and is unable or unwilling to return to that country because of a well-founded fear of being persecuted. Afghans have, for more than two decades, been the largest refugee group in the world. They are not currently, but at times they have accounted for up to one-half of the world's refugee population. There are millions of Afghan refugees still in Pakistan and Iran and neighboring countries, but some of them have made it to developed regions of the world, including the San Francisco Bay Area. We have about 60,000 Afghan refugees in the U.S., but the largest concentration resides right here. Welcome to California, resides right here, centered across the bridge in the East Bay in the city of Fremont in Alameda County. And I focused my study there. They have a variety of backgrounds, but there's two main immigration waves of refugees. The numbers are fairly consistent for the first period, the Soviet period, and also the Civil War era. Then it drops, and then we have more coming, the late Taliban period and the U.S. invasion. In my research, I studied the information needs, help-seeking processes, and associated communicative behaviors of Afghan female refugees in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's a qualitative ethnography. I was honored to do 40 in-depth interviews with female refugees and also some community leaders. Maximum variation purpose of sample. It was an exploratory study, participant observation for more than 2 years. They've become my friends, and with also key cultural informants and focus groups. My life has changed by being involved with this group, and I hope that I'm able today to express some of their needs. What I did is I had more than 250 stories that they told me in those 40 in-depth interviews, more than 250 stories. I asked them to tell me from pre-migration, migration, resettlement, and adjustment from their point of view what their important situations were that were difficult for them, that they didn't know what to do, and they described those stories to me. And so I want to share with you today barriers and enablers promoting the refugee health and wellness that I've drawn from those results. My dissertation was broader than health and mental health because they define the situations, but so many things related to health and mental health. And there are some structural underlying barriers that also are public health issues. Some multiple barriers in everyday experience. The memories of traumatic past in Afghanistan, which, for example, then they're not able to concentrate in doing things here because the trauma feels severe. Domestic abuse in some families, and that's common in any community. Impoverishment. They leave as refugees oftentimes at a moment's notice with nothing but the shirt on their backs, and often even leaving family members behind. So you can imagine how difficult that is. And then here, if they don't know the language and the culture, even for years, it can be difficult to get established. Cultural clashes, not just outside of the family, but even inside of the family, which leads to generation gaps as the children learn the system and the culture here and the language here in their schools. And then the concept of honor and shame. It can be very difficult in honor and shame-based cultures, especially, but in any culture, for a person to ask for help or to ask questions or to admit that they do not know something. And keep in mind that refugees that make it to the developed world oftentimes came from parts of society where they had been university professors, they had been government leaders, they had been business owners. And so they had been people who were well-educated and respected, and they've had that loss of status in coming to a new country, not of choice, but because they're fleeing for their lives. And so honor and shame can be a factor there. These are some multiple barriers, but I want to focus today on two underlying structural barriers that impact those multiple barriers and other barriers. The first one is the language barrier, and the second one is not knowing, quote, the system. Underlying structural barriers I've defined as ongoing obstacles that refugees encounter to their wellness and that complicate or create the framework within which everyday experiential barriers occur. And these also occur every day where there's a language barrier, but so much is going on because of these two underlying barriers that is really worthy of our attention as public health issues. So first, the language barrier. Afghans speak Dari or Pashto or both. From another study I've been involved with, a survey study of the health and mental health needs of refugees and with co-PI, we found that in the same community that 36% of Afghans in the San Francisco Bay Area speak little or no English. More than 40% read and write little or no English. And in fact, in the city of Fremont, where the study's focused, 137 different languages are spoken, if you can imagine. So immigrant groups, refugee groups, a very diverse community. Have you ever been to another country where you didn't know the language and you tried to order something off the menu? Okay, or even just try to do simple everyday things? Imagine living there. My research shows that the refugees feel blind and mute. One of them actually used that word, upon arrival, and in many cases years later because of the language barrier. The language barrier prevents many refugees from gaining direct access to a wide array of information from English-only sources, whether it's healthcare, government, social services, legal, and educational. This structural barrier creates stress and confusion, limits knowledge, constrains access, and thus impedes refugees' health and wellness. The current solution, we have college and university English classes, community-based English classes, adult school English classes. As an example, in the adult school, the refugees have told me, ones that arrived earlier and ones that arrived more recently, and by the way, ones that arrived more recently are less likely to be literate even in their own home language. But they told me they receive a list of classes in the mail, in English, by the way, yet nobody emphasizes the importance of learning English. And so if an Afghan is educated, maybe highly educated in their own country, they already know the importance of learning English. But if they've never gone to school, they might not realize that if they don't learn English, years from now, not only are they going to encounter these everyday barriers, but years from now, their children are going to become separated from them because their children are going to progress in this country and they won't be able to communicate with that same language and the same understanding. And they'll be left out of so many things. Barriers in the classroom. Now, this is interesting. The teacher only speaks English, which maybe if you're in intermediate language classes, that's okay. But for a beginner who's trying to learn ABCs, it's a little difficult. Students with various levels of language learning in the same class, some might already know the ABC and another does not. And students with different ethnic backgrounds in the same class. So these are the things that the women refugees told me was really difficult. In fact, I have a story here of one woman who did have education in Afghanistan. And she was so frustrated after a month of gaining nothing from the classes that she told her husband, let's quit. She went to the library and was able to check out a traffic book because she wanted to learn to drive. And she got a Dari English dictionary. So with the traffic book and the Dari English dictionary, this very ingenious, creative woman said, I'm locking myself in the bedroom for an hour a day. Take care of the kids. Nobody bother me. And she looked up every word to teach herself how to read. Not everybody's going to be able to do that. And let me also say that the adult English classes and the other do a great job for a lot of people, but there are some people left out, as I'm pointing out. A better solution, my research suggests a comprehensive program to enable refugee health and wellness. We need a system-level change to help the refugees who are able to learn English to actually do so. Some are not able either because of a learning disability or being too old, or their husband won't let them. But for those who can, let's not let there be continuing barriers on our side. Let's assess English level and special needs of incoming refugees for English class placement the same way we assess for health in certain areas. Okay, and that's right from the get-go. Evaluate the adult school English class program and fund improvements. Okay, the second major structural issue is not knowing the system. Afghan leaders repeatedly use the phrase, they do not know the system, to refer to the Afghan refugees' lack of awareness of how to navigate information in agencies in the U.S., such as the healthcare, employment, social services, etc. Thus, refugees struggle with bridging a variety of everyday barriers and understanding, impeding their health and wellness. A solution to enable refugee health and wellness: as professionals and public health service providers, we need to understand the differences between the systems in Afghanistan compared to the U.S., the systems with other post-1965 refugees who are linguistically and culturally different from earlier groups, as compared to the U.S., and point out, someone else mentioned who presented earlier, point out these differences to refugees when situations arrive. And the systems in Afghanistan, there's traditional tribal structures in the rural areas and authoritarian forms of government in the cities. The average citizen is accustomed to being told what to do by family members or the government. Individual decision-making and control, especially for some women and the young, can be non-existent. And indirect information and systems access is through relatives or bribes, if it is available at all, if healthcare is available at all, if other systems are available at all. So then they come to the United States, and we need to teach them an idea. The free market system highlights the idea of individualism, where people themselves directly navigate the U.S. information system, such as the healthcare system. They directly request the assistance they need from professionals as a matter of practice in looking something up in the phone book or on the internet, and calling that person directly to ask a question of a professional is not a concept that is easily understood when you're from a different system. Refugees can practice asking questions of professionals and being taught that this is not a shame honor situation in our country, in our culture. So many refugees are linguistically and culturally isolated. It takes time to learn a new language and a new system, and some won't be able to learn. But in the meantime, here's an evidence-based way to enable promotion of refugee health. I've called it Point Person. My research shows that there's a special type of interpersonal relationship central to helping refugees. The most helpful type of relationship is when they build a trusting interpersonal relationship with one or more point people as the refugee's main source of information for her diverse needs, his or her diverse needs. So like a parent might, you know, teach children all these different areas of life, when the refugees have someone, and not saying they're like children at all, but when the refugees have someone that teach them the shopping and the various everyday needs, and they'll also link them with community resources and offer social support, all of these things as kind of a comprehensive point person. It's so helpful. Some of the point people are Afghan, but it can also be a non-Afghan. Afghans who have been refugees, too, have a solid command of English and know the system. And these are different. This chart shows a continuum of point person relationships that exist in the San Francisco East Bay, from people who specialize in linking to community resources, those who are mentor for everyday needs, and everything in between. And you can look at that on your own. But it can be professionals who are paid, it can be volunteers, and even family members and friends. But many people don't have such a person in their lives, and they do much better when they do. So my recommendation is to develop comprehensive point person programs. For example, one example, a service learning program in colleges where they can comprehensively provide that link to resources, help with everyday needs, and offer emotional support. So the three main recommendations: number one, learning English, need a systematic, comprehensive program to help refugees learn English. Think about it. If this happens and the funding is available, it will actually save money in the long run, because then they won't need to rely if they learn English. Number two, understanding the U.S. system. We need service providers and refugees to understand the differences in navigating the social societal systems and teach that. And then number three, training pools of point people. Need programs with people who develop trusting one-on-one relationships with refugees. Thank you.